Well, good morning. All right, pretty good. Now, I know you all are in sort of this predicament where, like, you've gotten more sleep than the 9 o'clock service, and yet those are kind of the crazy people that wanted to get up that early. And so even though you're here at 10:15, you didn't want to be here quite that early. You'd have liked a little bit more sleep. But I think you all have a little bit more in you to help propel me forward here in this middle service. So we're going to try that again. Good morning. There we go. Hey, we are so incredibly excited that you guys are here with us this morning as we dive into part three of this 4-week series that we are calling Four. And this entire series revolves around our DNA here at Core Community Church. It's an incredible series for you to be at if you're new or you're back for the first time in a long time, because this series reveals what we believe God is calling us to as an organization. But there's more to this series than that. What we also believe is this. We also believe that this series outlines what God is calling you and I to in our individual lives. It reveals our mission and our purpose in this world. And what drives this series is this unprecedented truth. You see, for far too long, the local church has been known for what it's against. And when we really look at that phrase that underlines this series, when we look close enough and get honest enough, what we will begin to see is this truth as well. That if the local church has been seen for what it's against, then we as individual Christ followers are also seen in that same light. That for far too long, we as Christians have been seen for what we're against. And this series revolves around the premise of wanting to change that. That we want to be known for what we are for. And that we believe with all of our hearts that God is calling us in our lives with our mission and our purpose to be for our neighbors, to be for our city, to be for our world. But what does it look like to do that? How do we get there in all of this? Because it's certainly an uphill battle. It's a journey. And while over the course of the last 5.5 years since I have been here as lead pastor, we have taken steps in the right direction. And yet we still have a long way to go. We have a long way to go organizationally, and I know I speak for myself in saying I have a long way to go individually. And so a couple of weeks ago, we kicked off this series by underlining this truth, that we talk about being for our neighbors, we talk about being for our city, for our world. But the truth that many of us have lived in our lives is this: you can't be for somebody else until you've experienced somebody else being for you. For so long in our lives, we have experienced humanity letting us down again and again and again. There's not a person in this room who would not attest to the fact that we have been stabbed in the back, that we have been let down even by those closest to us, that we have been disappointed by other people. And because of that, what we have determined in our mind is this: if the rest of the world is not for me, then what's the point in me being for the world? But what we recognize is that the foundation of us being for our city, for our world, for our neighbors was never meant to be derived on whether or not the rest of the world is for you. We get something so much better than that. We get something to hold on to that is so much more constant than that. And that is this: that we can take heart in the fact that while the rest of the world may not be for us, we experience someone being for us in the form of the God of the universe. That God is for you. He is for me. He goes beside me, and sometimes in our lives, he pushes from behind us in the most trying circumstances of our life. When everything seems to be crumbling around us and our relationships seem to be falling apart and everybody else is letting us down, what we can take heart in is this: we have a God who never lets us down. And that becomes our starting point. That becomes the propeller that pushes us forward to be able to be for the world around us. And then last week, we continued the series with this thought. If we are supposed to be for our city, for our world, for our neighbors, then we need a definition of who our neighbors actually are. And so we got incredibly practical last week. And we took this incredible story in the life of a man named Jesus, and we broke down that as he's calling us to be for our neighbors, for our world, what does that tangibly look like? Who is he calling us to, and how far do we have to go in being for? And every week as we have journeyed through this series and we have taken an additional step in being for, what has been revealed to me time and time again is this question. This question that I want to ponder and continue to answer in my life, and I hope you feel the same. The question goes like this. When I reach the end of my life, what will I be remembered for? You ever found yourself asking that question? When I move on from this earth, what will the people that I have left behind remember me for? You see, for any of us who recently have been to a memorial service or been to a funeral, what we recognize is this. Funerals are always a reminder that the value of a life is measured in what has been given away. The value of your life and my life will always be measured in what we have given away. And so in light of that, why do we not ask the question, what am I giving away? What am I giving from my own life and investing into theirs? Because the measure of an accomplished life will not be how much we accumulate. It will not be the funds and the inheritance that we leave behind. The value of our life will be how many people did you impact? How many lives were you willing to sacrifice for? And when we do that, when we sacrifice our lives, our time, our finances for the sake of somebody else, we are changing the world one life at a time. And so if the value of our life will be measured by how many lives we have impacted, why are we not pondering this question? What am I doing to impact others? What am I giving up for the sake of somebody else's? How much am I stepping out of my own life and into theirs? Because when we are willing to do that, that's when God does incredible things in our neighborhoods. That's when God does incredible things in our city. That's when God does incredible things in our world. We are being called to impact others. We are being called to change the world. But here's the tension that every single one of us feel when we begin to throw out that phrase. We begin to throw out the phrase that you and I are being called to change the world. Undoubtedly, what many of us feel is this. Loving and changing the world seems like an impossible task, right? Especially for just one person, especially for just little old me. How could I possibly impact everyone and change everyone and love everyone in this world? It just doesn't seem doable. And the reality for many of us is this. Is that we look at this daunting task of changing the world much like we look at going out to the end of the diving board the very first time we consider jumping off into the water. And when the task of life seems so big, oftentimes we find ourselves stuck in the starting blocks, right? We find ourselves like that little boy again out on the edge just staring into the water, pondering if we're willing to take that risk, wondering if we'll get hurt in the process. And oftentimes you've lived this before. What we end up doing as we stand there and we look into the water is eventually we back up. And we determine that it's just not worth it because the board is just too high or the water is just too deep. But what if God is calling us to take this risk to change the world? What if he has given us the ability and he has called us to be more? You see, what does it begin to look like in our lives to eventually begin to realize that God is calling us to jump into a dark and broken world? About 4.5 years ago, Krista and I had an incredible opportunity presented to us. As I had just come on here and just sort of gotten my feet wet as the lead pastor at CORE, we had begun to consider what it looked like to shift our focus when it came to global missions, when it came to what we call our global impact ministries. And for so long, there's nothing wrong with this. We just determined that this isn't the way we want to start, and this wasn't the foundation we wanted to build when it came to our global missions. For so long, we had simply just given to a missionary that we never met, that we never saw in some part of the country, that we, or in some part of the world that we had never been to or never experienced. And we decided we wanted something more personal. We wanted something that felt more like a partnership that we got to experience and personally invest in. And so we came across an organization called Children's Hope Chest. And as our conversation began to progress, they presented this opportunity. Hey, I know it's about a week and a half out, but why don't you hop on and buy a plane ticket, and you and Krista can fly down to Guatemala and see what we do. And so Krista and I were like, sure, let's see what we got. We'll buy a plane ticket. We'll go down there together, and we'll explore what God has in store for us. And so we had 3 days on site down there, and the purpose of this trip was twofold. Yes, it was to see how the organization operates, but the second part of this trip was designed to allow us to see care points functioning and to allow us to see which care point we felt like we as a church fit in with. Their model is for us to partner with something called a care point. It's a centralized location within communities that provides for children and family health care, medical needs, clothing, food, schooling, supplies, all of those different needs within a family. And so every single day, we flew out on a Monday, we were there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Every single one of those days, the way the day would progress is this. We would wake up in the morning, we would jump in a giant van, and we would head off to our first care point. We'd spend the morning there. We would hear from the care point founders. We would hear from the staff. We would see how it functioned. We would play with the kids. And then at lunchtime, we would load back into a bus, and we would drive hours to another care point and do it all over again. And then the next morning, we would wake up, and we would do it all over again. And on day number two, we hopped into the giant van, and we drove to this rural location. And as we drove through this community, it was a small community that was incredibly impoverished and broken. Their huts were broken down, roofs with holes in it, and what we quickly learned was this, is that their community had no access to clean water. It was about an 8-mile walk both ways for them to find clean water. And so within their huts, what you would find is there were just buckets of water all over because they would try to make a trip and collect as much water as they possibly can. And then they would try to pare down how much water they were consuming every single day to make that water last as long as they possibly could. But then we rolled up to this care point and it was absolutely amazing. Their facilities were amazing. Their vision was amazing. They had this vision of wanting to be for the lost in their community and wanting to reach out to the hurting and the broken and wanting to be a source of hope. And they ultimately had this incredible vision that they wanted to become the water source for their community. And so they were looking at this large-scale project of how they could provide water for the entire community out of this care point. And as Krista and I heard about this and we saw this, we were like, that aligns with our hearts so much. They've got everything together, and it would be so easy to walk into here and to be a part of this. And so we hopped in the van with every intention that, like, that's the one we're going to pick. That's the one we're going to partner with at Core Community Church. And the second stop on that day was a care point called Puerta de Esperanza. And as we rolled up to this care point, they didn't allow us to get out of the van at first. And soon someone stepped onto the van and they said, hey, this care point operates out of a government building. The government building decided to close down early today, and so they have nowhere to operate out of. They had to send all of the kids home. We're going to go to a little school, and you're going to meet the founder and hear her talk in there. As we sat and we listened to Jamada talk, and we saw where this care point was and just some of the dysfunction that they were walking through, having to operate out of a space and a building that was not theirs and that was dictated by the government for them, what we quickly began to hear murmured around us from the other pastors and their wives was this. There is just too much work to be done here. This place is just so far from what we had hoped it would be. There is so much work to be done, and this place may be beyond helping. And every single other one of the pastors and their wives that sat around in those little desks with us determined this isn't just for us. And in the same light, when Krista and I sat there, almost simultaneously, we had this question pass through our mind. Ben, when you look at this situation, are you choosing to see the impossibility or are you choosing to see the opportunity? And in that moment, as Krista and I both clearly heard that question for us, what we determined was this. While everything looked rosy and looked great at the other care point, this was the care point that God was calling us to. Because what we saw in that moment and what we were reminded of is this, and it's what you and I need to be reminded of as we sense that calling into all of the world. It's that we serve a God that works in the business of making impossibilities possible. Y'all okay? That our God is about taking the ill-equipped individual and using them to do something far beyond their means, far beyond what they think they are possible of. That's the business that my God and your God is in, that he wants to use us to change the world in incredible ways, no matter how impossible you think it might be, no matter how big of a task. And he's looking at you and me as we look into our city and our world, and he's asking this question. Every day, are you choosing to see the impossibility? Or are you choosing to see the opportunity? And we see that reality play out perfectly in the story of a man named Abraham. It's where we're going to pick up and jump into this morning, the book of Genesis, chapter 12. If you haven't done so already, it's a perfect opportunity for you to grab your weekly again. And if you crack that open, what you'll find is a notes page on the inside. We've designed that specifically for you to help you follow along with us through the text. You can even grab a pen and fill in the blank as we go. Or if that's not your style, everything will come up on the screen for you. But to set the table a little bit for you, there is this promise, this calling in this moment that God gives to Abraham. And he gives this calling to Abraham at a time in his life where he has been married to his wife, Sarah, and they have been barren for years. They have been unable to conceive children. And because of that, they have simply begun to believe they will never have a family of their own. They will never be able to have children of their own. And in the middle of that disappointment, in the middle of them just buying in wholeheartedly to this is how our life is going to be and this is kind of where we're stuck, God comes to them and he speaks this over Abraham and his family. Check this out, starting in verse 2. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous. And you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. Check this out. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. Can you imagine hearing those words from God? And your descendants will outnumber the stars. And every family that lives on this earth will be blessed because of the starting point that I am creating in your family. Can you imagine hearing that blessing and that promise over your life when you're standing there like, I'm never going to be able to have kids? How is every family going to be blessed from my family when we're not even going to have a family? And years later, when they finally did start a family, do you know when God came to them and told them they were going to have a child, you know how they responded? They laughed. Because they felt stuck in where they were, and they felt like this calling and this mission that God had given them was beyond impossible in their lives. And Abraham looked at God, and he's like, God, you're telling me that my descendants will outnumber the stars, and my bloodline and the whole world will be changed because of me? At face value, God, that flat out seems impossible. And here, relating, we find ourselves in that exact same dilemma, right? We find ourselves in the midst of a series where we're talking about being called to change our city and change our world and change our workplaces and change our neighborhoods. And at face value, that seems impossible. Because Ben, if you knew my story, what you would know is this. My past is littered with mistakes, and there's no way God is calling me to make that kind of an impact. There's no way he would trust me with that mission. Ben, if you knew anything about me, you would know how risk averse I am, and there's no way I'm jumping off the diving board into the deep end called the brokenness and darkness of this world, because I'm going to get hurt and I don't want to get hurt and I don't want to take that kind of a risk. There is no way that God is calling me and you to that. And yet what we know is this, is that God sent his son into this earth so that you and I could become world changers. Do you realize that? That one of the purposes for God sending his son to this earth was so that you and I could change the world. so that we can make the impossible possible in our cities, in our neighborhoods, in our workplaces. He sent his son to put into motion a new plan for this world, but more than that, for your life and for my life, to help us see a way, even when the calling feels too big, a way to effectively change the world. And the way in which he did it was this. He sent his son to put into place four new things that would make it possible from this day forward for you and I to become world changers, for you and I to reach further and do more and be for. And he began in this one simple place. He said, if you want to change the world, the thing that I am putting into motion by sending my son is first and foremost this. I am creating a new movement. Jesus lays it out perfectly when he says this in Matthew chapter 16. For I will build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. I have come to start a new movement that is called my church. And here's what we need to understand about how powerful this is. Do you realize that the original movement that God started was all about coming in? In order to be right with God, you had to come into the tabernacle. In order to be made right with God, you had to bring your sacrifice and come in to the temple. And yet here, Jesus was coming to start this new movement that wasn't about people coming in, but was about the church going out, about the hope and the love of Christ being taken out into the world instead of forcing the world to come in to the church. Isn't that incredible? And in this passage, what we see in that one word, the English word church, is the Greek in the original text was actually this word ekklesia. And ekklesia is defined in this way. It is a gathering of people on the same purpose or calling. God was saying, I am calling you to become a group of people that is willing to link arms together on mission, on purpose, for what I want to bring about in this world, to bring my hope and my love into this world. And here's what's so cool. He says, if you will do that, not even the powers of hell can stop you. There is nothing on this earth that can stop a movement quite like that. That's how powerful it is. And that's why you hear me say over and over and over again that I believe with all of my heart that the local church is the hope of the world. You think I'm getting fired up? This is who I want us to become. This is what I believe with all of my heart, that God is calling us to become one step at a time, to be a part of this new movement. And here's what I know. When we are one standing by ourselves, looking at a tall task, it seems pretty impossible. But when we become a group of 250 people that walk into Core Community Church every single week together, and we decide that 250 of us are on mission and on purpose together and charging forward together, doesn't the big task feel a whole lot more doable? To know in this movement, you don't have to do it by yourself. It used to be just me going into the temple, and that's how I became right with God, and that's all this thing was made out to be. But now everything's changed, and it's just not about one-to-one. It's about us linking arms together to take that one into the brokenness and the darkness of this world. That is what the movement was about, but God knew this. He's no dummy. God knew that in starting that new movement, that this movement needed to be simpler than what it presently was. And so what did he do? He decided to change the agreement. And he brought about a new covenant, a new agreement between him and his people, something far simpler than what it had been. And Jesus, in his last supper with the disciples, as they're sitting around and Jesus knows what's about to happen and the rest of the disciples really have no clue that he's about to go die on a cross and everything he's been saying was actually the truth, he says this to them. Starting in verse 19, he took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. Then he broke it in pieces and gave it to the disciples, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." After supper, he took the cup of wine and he said, "This cup is the new covenant between God and his people." And then he defines it. This is an agreement confirmed with my blood, which is poured out as a sacrifice for you. See, I think sometimes we overlook the power of that moment. Jesus was bringing about this new agreement to the world. Why? Because as God looked at the world and he looked at his relationship with humanity, what he knew was this: our relationship has become broken, and I will do whatever I possibly can to fix it. That's how much I love you. That's how desperately I want a relationship with you. That this old system, this old covenant that was in place was all about hoops you have to jump through and rules you have to follow and regulations you have to make sure that you are in line with. And that is just too stinking difficult. And so let's wipe the slate clean, and I'm bringing my son to the earth, and I'm going to allow him to die on a cross, because what does this say? When he sheds his blood, that blood will wipe out the old covenant and it will bring in this new covenant that is so much simpler. Isn't about all these rules and regulations. I mean, can you imagine being a Jew before Christ came? And you're trying to convince someone, like, man, this relationship with God, it'll change your life. It is so good. And then you tell them, oh, yeah, by the way, if you want to start that relationship, you got to be circumcised. And, like, all the men were like, sounds good. Peace. I'm not down for that. Like, you had me up until that point. God was like, I see how difficult all these rules are, and we need something different to make it easier for my love and my hope to be brought into this world, for all the hoops and all the titles to be thrown out the window. As I think about that, it just reminds me of the past year in Krista and I's story. As some of you know, over the course of the last 12 months, Krista and I have been in this process of adopting our two little boys. But the precursor to being able to adopt those two little boys was that they had to be in foster care with us for at least 6 months. And so we became foster parents to them. For any of you who have done foster parenting or know anyone that has done foster parenting, what you quickly realize is this: there are a ton of hoops to jump through as foster parents. I mean, from the very get-go, it's like 60 hours of training and 80 pages of applications and paperwork, and you have to go through interviews, and you have to do all of these things just to become certified as a foster parent. And then when the kids get placed in your house, you have home visits in which they question how bad of a parent you are every single time that they show up, and you have paperwork that you need to do every 2 weeks that tells everything your kids did every single day of the week, and then you have to go through clothing logs of how much of every single piece of clothing they have, and you have all of these hoops to jump through. And then this glorious day comes along, this absolutely glorious day where a judge sits up on his throne and he says, there have been all of these hoops to jump through in this agreement, but I am creating a new agreement between you and your children. And the title foster is being removed. And now you are just mom and dad. You don't have to be foster mom. You don't have to be foster dad. They are officially yours. And it's like there's this moment in every single one of our lives where that new covenant makes that possible, where God is saying, I know all of the past in your life, all the hoops you've had to jump through, but right now I'm just adopting you as mine. No more hoops, no more rules, no more regulations. All you have to do is see that my son died for you on a cross and want him to be a part of your life. That's it. And Jeremiah, as he's looking forward to the coming of the Messiah, he foretells it so incredibly. In chapter 31, he writes this: I will put my instructions deep within them, and I will write them on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. And then he finishes it so incredibly. You want to know to what extent I'm getting rid of the hoops? I will forgive their wickedness, and I will never again remember their sins. That was the new covenant, and it was designed to help you and me in our mission of going out and being for the world in two ways. Number one, it makes our relationship with God simpler, right? That's a big thing. That's important. But there's a second part to that. It wasn't just about my relationship with God or your relationship with God. It was also about us being able to be on mission and take something simpler out into the world. God made a new covenant because this new covenant wasn't just supposed to be for me. It was meant for me to take that new covenant and to share it with the world. That's why he did it. And he said, you want to know what it looks like to use this new covenant in the best way possible? You want to know how to change the world? You want to know how to impact others? Then simply do this. I'm giving you a new command. And when you do just this command and focus on this command, everything else falls into place. He says this in John chapter 13. This is Jesus talking. So now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other. And sometimes I think it just would have been easier if Jesus would have stopped there. Because like we can paint whatever picture we want of love, but he had to keep going. He's like, no. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. Just love other people. Just love somebody. And I think here's the mistake that we oftentimes make. If you've gone anywhere, come back, because this is big. Sometimes we make the mistake of believing that changing the world is about changing the entire world. That's not what God is calling us to. God is saying, no. For you to change the world, what I'm calling you to is to do for someone what you wish you could do for everyone. Just do for somebody what you wish you could do for everybody. That's what it looks like to change the world. That's what it looks like to jump off the diving board into the deep. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Just love somebody. In this passage, when his disciples were sitting around listening to it, like this was a big deal in the moment because they looked back at all Jesus had done over 3 years and they're like, man, he kind of left a pretty tall order. He loved a lot of unlovable people. But then in like Jesus fashion, he couldn't just stop there. He had to go die on a cross for everybody. And it took this passage to a whole new level. It was like God was looking at you and at me, and he was saying, I'm calling you to love other people to the extent that you're willing to sacrifice something for them, that you're willing to give up some dollars for them, that you're willing to give up some time for them, that you're willing to love people even when it's hard to love, even when it's inconvenient. My new command, just love somebody. That's how you change the world. Just love. And then he says, now that you've gotten these other three things, let me tie a bow onto it for you. This is all leading to a new charge, a new battle cry for every single one of you. To know that this charge isn't just about right here, it's about reaching further than what you're presently reaching. And as he's sitting around with his disciples sort of one last time after he's raised from the dead, in Matthew chapter 28, we get something totally unprecedented. This has never been spoken before in Jewish culture. Jesus says this. Jesus came and told his disciples, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth, and this is how I'm choosing to use that authority. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. And he finishes in such a powerful way. Like this loses power if we don't hang on to the last part of this passage. And be sure of this. You don't have to do this by yourself. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. God was saying, I'm calling you to go out. Do you realize that going out was never a part of the Jewish mission? Like, no, God is just for us as Jews. We are the chosen people. But all of a sudden, Jesus comes and he says, no, that charge is being changed. I'm giving you a new charge out into this world. Go as far as you can possibly go. Reach as far as you can possibly reach. Let the Gentiles know that I am a God who is for them as well, that I love them, and I sent my Son, not just for you as the Jews, not just for you who think you have your life together. I sent my Son for the most broken and the darkest parts of this earth. And because of that, I now need you to be the light. That's why Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 5. You are the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it's lost its flavor? Can you make it salty again? It'll be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless. No, you are the light of the world. Like a city on a hilltop that can't be hidden. Check this out. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. What is Jesus saying here? Man, I gave you this new covenant. Not for you to hide. Not for you to be paralyzed in fear at how big the task is. No, I've given you this so that you can be a light to the rest of the world, so that you can jump into the darkness and light it up. That's what I'm calling you to. That's what I'm asking you to do. The world cannot afford you and I to be paralyzed. I know. That's harsh. But there is somebody in this world who is waiting for you and I to do what only we can do. To do what we are being called to do so that their lives, so that their eternities can be changed. There is somebody in this world who is waiting on you to give up your own preferences for the sake of their eternity. Jesus, help me see and define this for me. How far into the world are we being called to go? What does it look like to go into all the world? And Jesus says, I got you covered. Parting shots coming up as Jesus is standing there on the mountainside with a crowd of people. He's about to ascend into heaven. The very last thing he says to them we find in Acts chapter 1, verse 8. And you will be my witnesses, telling people about me everywhere. And it's like Jesus had this light bulb go off in the moment, and he's like, I think for humanity, I kind of need to explain what I mean by everywhere. And so let me break this down for you. I want you to be my witnesses for me everywhere. In Jerusalem, throughout Judea, in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. What does Jesus mean here? In historical context, let's break this down. When he says, I'm calling you to go into Jerusalem, what he means is this. I'm calling you to go into your city. Jerusalem was the epicenter of the Jewish faith. This was everybody's primary city was Jerusalem. He's saying, I'm calling you to be for your city. I'm calling you to be a part of Community Impact Day. I'm calling you to support your local schools. I'm calling you to be for the teachers in your local schools. I'm calling you to do things like the summer lunch program and to feed the hungry right here in your city. I'm calling you to jump on the back of things like a dream center that Core Community Church is dreaming about in our future, of putting something smack dab in our city center that is about helping broken people in whatever stages they're in. It is about a hand up instead of a hand out. And I'm calling you to be a part of dreams like that and link arms to do something more than what you could do by yourself. But 250 of you, you can pull that off with a bang if you are for your city. I'm calling you to be for Judea. What does he mean? Judea is where Jerusalem was located. It was their county or their state. Man, I'm calling you to support local businesses. I'm calling you to eat local. I'm calling you to shop local. I'm calling you to be for all of the other local school districts in your area. I'm calling you to support people here in this church who don't call Shelby, Ohio home, but they call Ontario or Belleville or Mansfield or Crestview or Ashland home. I'm calling you to be for those communities as well. I'm calling you to be for Samaria. What does he mean here? If you were here last week, you know the significance of Samaria, mortal enemies of the Jews. This was the bordering territory, still in the same country. And God is saying, I'm asking you to be for your country, even other cultures, even people you don't agree with, even people you don't see eye to eye with. I'm calling you to love them and bring my hope into their life. I'm calling you to do things like Global Impact Day, where you provide 30-some thousand meals for people in need right here in this country to be distributed in large cities where they need it desperately for someone to stand in the gap. I'm calling you to be for future campuses at Core Community Church that spread out into other counties and to other places. I'm calling you to be for others, even if it's outside of your reach. And then let me make it clear. I'm calling you into all of the earth. I'm calling you to take it to the world. I'm calling you to consider what would it look like to sacrifice something of yours to be for a little child or a family in Guatemala and to say $40 is not too much of a leap for me to say I'm contributing to the future of a little kid who doesn't have anybody else standing in the gap for them, who doesn't have anybody else who wants to provide food or schooling. And so I'll do it from thousands of miles away to bring the love and the hope of Christ into their life. That I'm supporting an organization organization that says we're not stopping at Guatemala, that our ultimate goal is that we partner with a care point in Africa someday, that we partner with an organization. We're starting this off here really, really soon. Clear Blue Clean Water Project, located out of Akron. They have done over 300 wells in over 23 countries for people who do not have clean water. That I'm standing behind an organization and I'm giving up of myself to go into all the world to love people. You see, back in 1982, there was this young man who set up a meeting with John Sculley. John Sculley was the CEO of PepsiCo, one of the largest, most successful organizations in the world. This young man sat across the table from John Sculley and he said this: "Do you want to continue to sell sugar water? Or do you want to change the world?" This young man's name was Steve Jobs. Within months, John Sculley had quit his job at Pepsi and had become the CEO of Apple. And within years, he had become one of the highest paid executives in the world for one of the most influential companies in the world. And I think God looks at you and at me and he says this: "Do you want to continue to keep living a normal life in your bubble? Or you want to change the world? I'm inviting you to change the world. But you can't do that if you stay paralyzed. You can't do that if you're not willing to sacrifice something for someone you've never met before. I'm calling you to say yes. I'm calling you to do for someone what you wish you could do for everyone. That's how you change the world." Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, and we thank you for this new movement, this new covenant, this new commandment, and this new charge that you have given us to be able to change the world. And what's so incredible is that while it takes courage to do that, we don't have to do it alone. The new charge was about us linking arms with the rest of the church to be able to be on the same purpose and the same mission to change the world. And we don't have to do it without you, the one who holds the world in his hands, is on our team. So God, this morning, I pray for each of us individually, but I also pray for us collectively as an organization, that we will be willing, even when it seems like too tall of a task, to jump, to say yes. Even when the board seems too high and the water seems too deep, that we want to change the world. It's in your name that I pray. Amen. So we finish in the same place we finished every week. This is where the rubber meets the road. How do you take that next step? And maybe for you, you've been putting it off. You've come up with every excuse in the book. But maybe this is the moment where you finally say yes and you stop being paralyzed at the end of the board and you just jump and you say, "Today, I'm going to sign up for Community Impact Day. Today, I'm going to be a part of Linking Arms, at least right here in my city, to do something to start changing the world, because I can't do it for every city, but I want to do for one what I wish I could do for everyone." But today is the day you get signed up. But today is the day that you begin to change the world alongside the rest of the people in this room. Thanks so much for being here today. Have a great rest of your Sunday. We hope to see you next week.